Now, let's move to item 575, because I think Commissioner Saltzman has some people here to speak. So could you read that one, please?
575, direct the Portland Revenue Bureau to designate 30% of the City of Portland's portion of all transient lodging taxes collected from short-term rentals to the Housing Investment Fund within the Portland Housing Bureau.
Commissioner Saltzman.
Thank you, Mayor. I think we're all aware of a recent survey that was conducted by DHM Research that Portlanders were asked to rate services provided by the City of Portland. And it was no surprise, Parks and Recreation scored very high, 87% approval rating. Police and Public Safety, 82%. Planning and Sustainability, 63%. Affordable Housing, only 36%. I think you can always read different messages into poll results, but I think that says two things. One, it says, I think it can be read that maybe we need to be doing more to deal with the affordable housing crisis. But I also think Portlanders astutely recognize there is an affordable housing crisis in this city at this time. Our vacancy rate in our rental market is 3%, which is one of the lowest vacancy rates in the nation. And it certainly does say that we need to be doing more to increase our supply of affordable housing. And I do want to thank the mayor and the council for recognizing that in the budget that we are poised to adopt very soon for next fiscal year. What I'm promising, and I promise to remain diligent to look for additional sources of revenue to continue to develop more affordable housing, continue to develop programs that respond to people who are homeless and their needs. And we need to be thinking creatively because, as we all know, our tax increment funds are projected to decrease over time. Federal resources are always problematic and unpredictable and generally trending downward. And so that's why I'm asking for council's help today with this resolution. Short-term rentals are a new phenomenon in Portland and really and indeed around the world. And while this is a point, you know, we cannot really quantify their effect on housing availability, we do know that there will be one. I think most people can connect the dots and see that there's a nexus that when people can choose to rent their rooms on rent a room in the house or two rooms in their house on a short-term basis, it can be more lucrative than perhaps the pain and suffering of a long-term tenant, somebody who can afford, who needs that housing stock. So what I'm asking, and I appreciate the advocacy of Israel Bayer of Street Roots for pushing on this today, and this resolution that I'm putting forward, Commissioner Fish and I are going to ask for a substitute to be considered in a minute. But the long and short of it is to capture a percentage of the new revenues that will be coming in through transient lodging taxes from these new short-term rentals and put it into the Housing Investment Fund so it can be invested in creating more affordable rental housing in particular. We started out with an approach that had some pushback from our budget office, and I always appreciate their pushing back. And so what we have, the substitute that we will offer in a moment, takes a somewhat different approach and in essence says that we will start by in the year, next year, 15-16, dedicating at least $300,000 of the incremental transient lodging tax from the short-term rentals to the Housing Investment Fund. And we think that, and we will recognize that at the fall bump coming up. And we think that that conservatively is at least 50% of the estimated revenue that will come in from short-term rentals. And I think that's a fair amount to be dedicating to affordable housing. And so with that, I guess, Commissioner Fish, would you like to offer the substitute or you want me to?
Why don't you offer it and I'll second.
Okay, I would offer a substitute and Carla has copies of it. Again, it gets away from dedicating a specific percentage of the hotel tax, transient lodging tax, and puts it in the verbiage of current appropriation level.
Mayor, I'll offer the second for the purpose of laying this before the council.
Okay. Moved and seconded.
And we do have some people who wish to testify.
So I have a question. Why are we considering this before we've even decided whether we're going to expand the transient lodging regulations?
Timing is always problematical. I think it's a safe bet that, you know, one way or another, we're going to do something on transient lodging. If we don't, this resolution is moot.
Well, perhaps I could suggest that we hold over the vote on this until we decide whether we're going to do the transient lodging expansion, because it's pretty insulting to folks who are coming in this afternoon if they believe that it's a done deal already.
Well, I think that's a fair point, but I also think that my point is fair, too, that if we don't do anything this afternoon, then this resolution becomes moot. But, you know, I'm open to putting the vote over.
I don't, having it
this afternoon, I guess.
You know, I actually don't think Dan's intent was to insult anyone. It was to frame an issue, establish a nexus, and begin this conversation. Procedurally, I'm less concerned about the sequence than I am in putting this before the council, and I think... Mayor, we could certainly put this over. We also have people here who are interested in testifying. We could amend it so that it's conditional, or we could take some testimony and set it over. Mm-hmm. But I would say that since we have some folks here, let's give them a chance just to be heard.
Yeah, definitely want to.
I'd certainly be happy to hear the testimony, and then I have some questions for the City Budget Office.
Okay, well, then let's take testimony then, and then consider amendments and discussion or substitute.
Mayor, do we need to adopt the substitute just so it's before us?
Sure. Let's do that to put the substitute before us, and then we can go on and hear testimony and decide whether we're going to set this over or otherwise act on it. So roll call on the substitute, please.
Fish.
Aye.
Saltzman.
Aye.
Novick.
Aye.
Fritz.
Willing to support putting it on the table for discussion. Aye.
Hales.
Same here. Aye. Okay. Then who do we have signed up? Or Dan, any other comments before we do?
No.
Okay.
Go to testimony.
We have two people. Scott, I'm sorry, I can't read the last name, and Tristan Webb?
I'm sorry. I guess the people I had were invited then. Did you have Israel Bear?
No, Mark he's Jolan? Not on the sign-up sheet.
Okay.
Well, let's call them.
I didn't have a sign-up sheet. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. Let's consider them to be invited testimony then. And Jess Larson, right, from Northwest Pilot Project.
Hey, come on
up. My apologies.
Good afternoon. Thanks for waiting.
Absolutely. Thank you. I guess I'll start. My name is Israel Baer. I live in North Portland, and I'm the Executive Director of Street Roots. Mayor and Commissioners, thank you all for your support of both housing and homeless services. When people ask me if City Hall is a friend to housing and homelessness, I often tell them that we don't only have one advocate, but we have five advocates at City Hall for these important issues. I'm here today to basically advocate, given the circumstances related to gentrification, the rental market, the relationship between business and homeless people on the streets, to have the short-term rental fee go towards housing, given the current circumstances and climate that we're under. So I just wanted to voice my support for this. I understand that it's a process and there may be a lot of questions that have to be answered, but I just think understanding that we're opening up a whole market towards tourism and other folks that are going to benefit from our great city as it relates specifically to housing, that it only makes sense that some of that money should go to support people experiencing homelessness and poverty. So thank you.
Go ahead.
Good afternoon. My name is Jess Larson. I work at Northwest Pilot Project. We're one of the region's oldest nonprofit providers working to address issues of poverty for people in downtown Portland, especially seniors. And over probably the last 10 years, we've started exclusively almost focusing our work on affordable housing because that is the greatest issue that people living in poverty experience. I've worked for Northwest Pilot Project for the last 8 years, advocating for people who are at risk of homelessness or are currently experiencing homelessness, trying to solve that. And I can mark year by year the change in homelessness in our city by the stories of homelessness that I hear and the faces that I meet. I think a lot of time when we talk about homelessness, our minds conjure up the picture of someone who's disheveled, maybe disabled on the corner with a cardboard sign or waiting in line for shelter, and that's simply just an inaccurate and incomplete picture of homelessness today. 20% of homelessness today is the result of people with disabilities or severe barriers, and these are things that agencies like ours can solve. We're skilled, we know how, and we're doing it every day. But 80% of homelessness is an economic reality, and this is a problem that our agencies can't solve. It's the sheer lack of affordable apartments, low-wage jobs, not enough employment. And that's why we need the help of our public systems to really, truly solve affordable housing. Incidentally, I, along with my husband, host Airbnb guests at our home in Northeast Portland. We rent out our second bedroom, and we really love sharing our home. We love introducing people to Portland, showing them a good time, telling them where to eat and not eat, and you know the story. It's really fun to show off Portland. And every time we do, we're so aware of how many people don't have a good, safe, dry, warm place to sleep each night. And we know that the short-term rentals like Airbnb have a direct connection with the decreasing available apartments and the increasing in rent. And so this seems like a perfect solution, a perfect first step in the right direction to attribute this new resource to addressing our growing problem. And in time, we can really solve the problem for 19,000 families who are in Portland who don't have an affordable home to live in. So thank you for the proposal, Commissioner Fish, and thank you for hearing our testimony.
Commissioners, Mayor Hales, my name is Mark Jolin. I'm the executive director of JOIN. We're one of your nonprofit partners in the effort to meet the needs of homeless people in this community. I appreciate having a chance to talk about the specific proposal. Thank you, Commissioner Saltzman and Commissioner Fish, for bringing it forward. I hope that the council will support it. Portland is such a wonderful city. I sit on the Portland Housing Advisory Commission, and at yesterday's meeting, we heard a presentation about Portland's many strengths, including the fact that people are bringing their skills here in large numbers, that our economy is starting to get stronger. And as someone who works with people every day who are looking for jobs, and as the director of an organization that depends on the economic health of the community to support the work that we do, it's extremely exciting and encouraging to think that we're seeing an economic strengthening in our community. But the presentation to the commission yesterday also called out one of the most significant challenges facing our community, the enormous unmet need for affordable housing. Among comparable cities nationally, we have one of the highest percentages of rent-burdened households. Tight supply and growing demand for rental property has driven up rents double digits year over year for the last several years. This has had a profound impact on the currently homeless people that JOIN works with. They're struggling more than ever to find units, and the units that they do find are too often costing them more than 70 or 80% of their limited incomes. And the declining affordability of our rental market is also impacting the currently housed families we have, who find themselves one step closer to being homeless again with each rent increase. By itself, this dedicated revenue won't solve the affordable housing crisis. But flexible local dollars like this are among the most important tools in our community's toolbox. We can use them to provide vital gap financing for traditional affordable housing development projects, to pilot innovative permanent housing development concepts, and to implement creative strategies like short-term rent assistance to help low-income families access and sustain private market housing options. This dedication of lodging tax funds to affordable housing will help ensure that homeless and low-income Portlanders share in the benefits of the economic growth that this form of tourism brings. And I expect that those people who use short-term rentals will appreciate Portland all the more, knowing that this is how we're using some of the revenue that they are helping generate in our community. So I encourage you to support this proposal. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Are there others?
Actually, Mr. Mayor, could I ask a question?
Go ahead,
of
please.
This panel?
Yeah, please.
And I understand that there's a bewildering array of different housing-related programs. And it's also my understanding that the city has been sort of on and off in its investment. Of the city every year invests in housing affordability. It's my understanding the city has gone back and forth as to investment in the Housing Investment Fund in particular. So I would like some discussion, some explanation of why it's especially appropriate to put this money into the Housing Investment Fund as opposed to some other housing program.
So So I think I saw Tracy Manning here, who's the Housing Bureau Director, and she would be better placed, certainly than I am, to answer that question.
Thank you.
All right,
thanks.
And maybe I'll take a stab at that too. But to me, the Housing Investment Fund, regardless of what it may say somewhere in a budget document, it's the place where I want to see monies go that are dedicated to increasing the supply of affordable housing. So that's why I call it the Housing Investment Fund. It just, the name sounds right. It seems like the appropriate depository for money to go for affordable housing. So, and if there are formal restrictions on it, then I would propose to change those at the appropriate time. But Tracy, I don't know if you wanted to take a stab at that or?
Yeah.
I think we're just using it as a generic placeholder term for money to go to invest in new affordable housing.
Could it be used for purposes such as, like, the Fair Housing Council talked about the importance of doing more investigations of conditions in existing housing to make sure that that housing is habitable, which they presented, I thought, made a very compelling case that that's a way of, in effect, increasing the supply of habitable, affordable housing.
I wouldn't rule that out, but you know, I'm seeing it more as we want to increase the supply of affordable housing. I think to the extent the Fair Housing Council did make that point, that's an intriguing point.
And
ultimately, council would be involved in appropriating any money from this Housing Investment Fund.
Commissioner Novick, it would be my sense that which the issue you've raised, which is an excellent one, is ultimately a policy question for the council to address. But I want to ask Mark Jolin a question. So one of the issues that I've heard, and by way of pushback, is what's the nexus? And put aside the question of whether we should dedicate future revenue streams for a particular purpose. One issue that's come up is what's the nexus here and why these funds for affordable housing? And I thought about that, and I was reminded that you were involved once upon a time in a debate about a 30% set-aside for affordable housing. And that, when it first came to council, actually did not have unanimous support. In fact, it had a skeptic in the person who then was the housing commissioner about that approach, a dedicated funding, and whether a dedicated funding would end up, in effect, creating a ceiling and have other unintended consequences. But my recollection is the debate about the 30% set-aside was something like this. When we do urban renewal and we invest in these geographic areas, one of the intended or unintended consequences of urban renewal is property values go up, we price people out, there are impacts on people who otherwise may choose to live there. So if we dedicate a portion of those urban renewal monies for housing, we're insured that we're investing in a stock of housing that allows people to stay or to be able to afford to live in an area that's going to see a rise in property values generally. Is that fair?
I think that's right. That's how that argument went. And in my mind, it's this concept of equitable economic development, right? That we want to see tourism increase. We want to see these industries flourish. We also want to anticipate what the consequences of those are going to be for lower income folks who haven't had access to opportunity in the same ways. And so as we further economic development strategies of this sort, like the temporary rental housing, we're also cognizant of the impacts, and Jess touched on them, that they can have on the housing market and our other goals. And if there's a mechanism we can put in place like this that tries to counterbalance somewhat the impacts, then I think we do that in the interests of ensuring that the benefits are equitably distributed.
And the impact, which is alluded to in the resolution and the final whereas, is that the legalization of more short-term rentals in certain circumstances will potentially impact the availability of long-term rental housing. So what this contemplates is if we bring this industry out of the shadows, regulate it, and it grows, we are likely, I would say, I think Dan's language is potentially, that's modest, I would say likely to have an impact on the available affordable housing in our community. And therefore, that would set up the nexus, which would give us a base to say, let's take a portion of the revenues generated from that activity and dedicate it to funding replacement housing so that people have choices. Would you like to care to respond to that?
Only to say it's definitely the case that shared housing arrangements, which is what this sort of is replacing, right, those are one of the strategies that we have available to us to help people who have very restricted incomes find a permanent place to live. So it's renting out the bedroom in somebody's home. And so to the extent that this will create an alternative path to raise revenue for those homeowners where they might not look for that person who would be a shared housing, a long-term tenant, that's what we're trying to address, the impact of that.
Isn't it also sort of a matter of if we start assuming that anybody with a home can rent out a room for $6,000, I think the average is something like $6,800 a month, then landlords will start saying, okay, we can jack up the rent by $6,840 a year, and rents will just go up for everybody based on that assumption.
I mean, I think, yes, I don't know about the numbers, but the idea that to the extent that there are even more limited choices for low-income people who are out there looking for rentals, the landlords who control the properties will be able to further increase their rents.
Okay, thank you. Thanks very much.
Thanks.
Okay, and there are more signed up to testify, I believe?
Yes, we have three more, Scott, Tristan Webb, and Charles Johnson.
Okay, come on up. Go ahead, whoever would like to be first.
Thank you for having us today. My name is Scott Brian. I'm the past president of the King Neighborhood Association and a past board member of Northeast Coalition of Neighborhoods. I'm also the chief strategy officer of Vacasa, one of the fastest growing companies in Portland. We are a vacation rental property management company headquartered and based here in Portland with 300 employees and looking to hire thousands more, but we cannot operate within the city of Portland. It's a very complex conversation and complex, it's a very complex situation in that we don't know how short-term rentals will impact Portland. Some of the real questions that need to be asked is what is affordable? Right now, the regulations do not permit five-bedroom houses in the west side from being taxed and as its short-term rental. That's not an affordable house, but yet it's being limited as an income source to support initiatives like Commissioner Saltzman's idea of having short-term rental taxes go towards affordable housing. So my point is that limitation is not the answer. It's shared housing and wholly rented houses are two very different animals, and the recap process doesn't address that full conversation. So if there's two things that I can give you today is that the full conversation around how taxes and affordable housing and their implications occurred within the recap process, it needs to be addressed in a full committee. And also as a vacation rental property manager, we want to give our whole support to Street Roots Northwest Pilot Project and join in echoing that we support that some of the taxes that are possible from the short-term rental industry go towards affordable housing.
Thank you.
I'm also an employee at Vacasa Rentals, Tristan Webb. And Vacasa Rentals is at 3934 Northeast Martin Luther King Boulevard. And as one of the 300 employees, as a stakeholder, I'd like to also recommend that the transit room tax is a good source for various city budget projects, including the affordable housing. I'm also a stakeholder as a board member of the Oregon-based over 30-year-old Vacation Rental Managers Association, a nonprofit based in Oregon, which serves to educate and further advance the professional operations and impact of professional vacation rental managers. And we were pleased to hold our Western Conference at the Nines Hotel in 2009. We're also excited to present our Western Conference at the Marriott Waterfront in April of 2015. And so there have been and will be a lot of professional property managers in the city of Portland, although not operating in the city of Portland. I've also presented as keynote and a session presenter regarding working with government for the benefits of the neighborhoods and the traditional short-term vacation rental management industry from Monterey, California to Orlando, Florida to Barcelona, Spain. And while Portland is unique and has its own looks and needs, this, as Commissioner Saltzman suggested, very, very similar thoughts and discussions are occurring in Amsterdam, in Barcelona, in Paris, and all over the United States. And what I'd like to offer is that the Vacation Rental Managers Association and Vacasa Rentals would like to be your support in finding data. There's a lot of assumptions, which I'm sure you'd love to have data showing. We have a lot of data from local, national, and international markets, which can help you make better decisions. And we stand ready to do so. And we support this, as we've seen other communities in other neighborhoods and other cities benefit from the green funding that is tourism, that a performance fund that supports tourism almost always returns a much higher ROI than other budget line items, and that this industry can serve, I think, a much bigger impact than the suggested $300,000. So thank you for your time.
Thanks. Questions? Thank you all. Oh, sorry, Charles. No, we had
call. That's all right. Sorry. I'm glad that the conversation went around to Barcelona. In Barcelona, when the government and private developers moved to displace some very poor people, the working class people rioted and stopped that. And if you don't get your act together here, we can have riot tourism. We have these conversations where Ms. Manning from the Housing Bureau and Mr. Bayer from Street Roots come together, but we never talk really about the painful numbers. One day, we need to talk about exactly how many people are on fixed income and exactly how many people are working but not even getting as much money as people on fixed incomes. We need to talk about why you're happy to collect property taxes, which are probably disproportionately low, off the West Wind Hotel and the Joyce Hostel, and still have a tourism environment where people who visit Old Town Chinatown walk past people sleeping in doorways, not completely by choice. If there was shelter, if there was adequate low-income housing, what a much more wonderful, tourist-friendly, safe environment we would have. So I'm glad that this small proposal is coming forth, but I want you to keep it honest in the context of all this time and discussion is going into helping a small fraction of the people in need, and the Coordinating Committee to End Homelessness, JOIN, TPI, sometimes spend so much money focusing on protecting or enhancing their revenue streams to do services that we don't be honest with our employed and working class and new industry neighbors like the gentleman sitting behind me about what we really need to do, how many people in this town receive SSI, SSD, and why are we betraying those people and not creating enough housing for them? Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Others?
Yes, Mr. Lightning.
Thank you all.
Thank you.
I represent Think Lightning Company. My name is Lightning. On the transient lodging tax, why not do 50%? I have no issue on that. The more the better. You want to put it in the housing investment fund? Absolutely. We need more development. We need to focus on the chronic homelessness. Anything we can do is beneficial. Now, on the short-term rentals, as you know, we're going to come back at 2 o'clock and have a discussion on that. I think this resolution needs to be held over until that discussion is finalized because it affects this. And that's just my opinion. Now, also on this short-term rental, in my opinion, by allowing people in houses to be able to rent out their rooms is a great benefit to the homeless community, because any time you can have additional housing inventory out there, that will, by the supply, bring down the rents to a more affordable level. And that will happen. The market will dictate that, and anyone can say otherwise, but the market will dictate that. More supply will bring down the rental prices, and that will also help the homeless community, because we will have units in housing or out in houses that people very well may be able to rent at a very reduced price because a lot of people in houses are just trying to maybe make their property taxes, their insurance, and if they can do this program, the Recap 6 or the program in a reasonable manner without having to pay a lot of upfront fees to do that, they're going to pass that on throughout the community at lower rents, bottom line. And so these short-term rentals I find very interesting, and if you allow that to happen throughout the city, that's going to benefit reducing homelessness. And the more inventory out there, the more supply of housing, the more development that we're talking about through this housing investment fund is absolutely beneficial. That creates more affordable housing, and it gives a lot of the people in houses the ability to make sure they can make their property tax payments, make sure if there's other fees being assessed to them, they have another avenue to look at and say, hey, I'm okay with this. I won't be fined by doing this. I'll just notify my neighbors, and I'll let the city know what I'm doing. So, yes, this is very positive to drop the prices in overall apartment units. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. No one further signed up?
That's all. Signed up.
Questions for staff?
Yeah, I'd like the City Budget Office Director to please come up. I just want to make sure I understand what we did in the budget last week. So what was the what do we currently get from short-term rentals that are currently submitting taxes in the past year? What was in the forecast for that?
So I'm actually going to call Terry up, who can talk about sort of the breakdown of short-term rentals.
Okay.
But I will say that everything that we were aware of has been included in the forecast, in the five-year forecast going forward.
Thank you.
Hi.
So give me a breakdown of what's in the forecast that we adopted last week and then spent.
Okay. Currently, we have a number of different types of short-term rentals on status with us in collecting and remitting transient lodging taxes. So we have what are often known as bed and breakfast establishments. So those are generally, they're going to have 3 to 6 bedrooms. They go through a huge conditional use process. And so there's approximately $67,000 in transient lodging taxes collected annually from them, and that is in the forecast. Additionally, we have other short-term rentals. Those are folks that we've been trying to find short-term rentals over the last few years to get taxes collected from them. We've got an auditor that's been doing that a lot. So we have approximately, from those that we found, $50,000 to $75,000 additional in transit lodging taxes from that group. That is currently also in the forecast.
So currently about $150,000, up
yes.
to $150,000. That,
roughly. That's in the current forecast that we've been collecting year after year okay. along those lines. And then I believe there's something else in the forecast that was in anticipation of what you might be hearing this afternoon and some discussions that have been going on. Then some additional funds have been put into the forecast. That's about $500,000.
So total about a little over $600,000 that we thought we were going to get, we estimated we were going to get, we put in the budget, and then we spent it.
Correct, yeah. As with all sort of general fund revenues, right, it was one of the pieces that went into the total revenue forecast.
And what did we give extra to housing in the budget last week?
The budget includes, in addition to just their normal current appropriation level, an additional $1.25 million of ongoing revenue and $1 million of one-time revenue.
So in a sense, what we did is already did more than what is being called for in this resolution. We already added $1.25 million of ongoing revenue to the Housing Investment Fund.
And actually, that's all of housing's budget total. The Housing Investment Fund got $1 million of one-time revenue.
So it already got $1 million. So we figured we were going to have more money this coming year. The five of us agreed that we were going to put $1 million into the Housing Investment Fund. Is that correct?
Yes.
And that included the projection on the transient lodging taxes.
Yes.
So we've done it for this year. That's already, well, as long as we all vote on it in June, that's how we allocated these funds for this year. What does this proposal do that then, because it's what it's asking for is another $300,000 above and beyond the million.
what this proposal would do is it creates, and again, the substitute creates an ongoing current appropriation level target of $300,000 that would go into the Housing Investment Fund starting in 2005-06.
We don't know that we're getting another additional $300,000 in addition to the $600,000 that we budgeted for. Is that correct? Are we estimating we're going to get?
This is essentially establishing a CAL target for the Housing Investment Fund. It is related, I think, to the short-term rental discussion that's going on, but it would actually be occurring separate from that. The substitute also asks us to report back every year in the fall bump on what the actual short-term rental collections are and then make an adjustment so that this CAL target would adjust to roughly 50% of what those short-term rental revenues would be. But it's not dissimilar to some of the other actions the council took in the budget in terms of saying in 2005-06, you know, adding some CAL target increases for other bureaus.
But just to be clear, we don't expect that we're going to have an extra $300,000. This would be coming from other general fund sources.
That's exactly right. Yeah.
Thank you,
Andrew. Help me understand something. Prior to us taking up the recap, how is it that you've put in over 5 years into the forecast the projected revenue on something the council hasn't acted on?
Yeah, there's always a gray area when we do our forecast, and we want to make sure we include everything that that is sort of known at that point. Actually, there was at that point some discussion about agreements that had been reached about new revenue, which is why that was included. Yeah, it was sort of a decision in terms of what to include and what not to. We want to make sure we include everything. I would point out that had we not included it, I mean, the conversation doesn't change at all. We would have had $500,000 less in the approved budget that you approved last week and would now be talking about
this. So one of the challenges in the discussion we're going to have this afternoon is there is currently a market for short-term rentals outside of our regulatory framework. Right? We believe this is going on illegally. And so we're trying to bring one of the ideas behind our proposal this afternoon is to bring people under a regulatory framework so that we get life and health safety issues addressed and other kinds of things. How did you get to the $500,000, and what's your estimate of the potential ceiling that we might collect once this thing is, if the council moves forward with the regulations?
I'm going to take an extra step before I think I answer okay. That. So what you're hearing this afternoon is everything involving the zoning code. There's nothing that's actually happening with the transient lodging code. So we've always looked at it, whether you're in the illegal or the legal, if you're providing these services, you need to pay those taxes. So we've been working, as I said, to get everybody who should be collecting and remitting these on board. We have been working with folks to get agreements and get them on, and we believe that that will be happening as of July 1. So that's why that estimate came out, because we're on the doorstep of finalizing that agreement. So that's kind of why that's there. So the cap, it's very hard that we don't have a lot of information about all of these rentals. It's very hard to find them. We've been working the last 3 years very diligently and have only been able to raise, you know, the bar so much. I don't know, and it's very difficult to calculate right now what that cap might be. Could there be more? Absolutely. And we hope.
What's the figure the Planning Bureau is using? Because when they briefed us, they've been talking about a range. What's the
range? I don't know for sure, because I'm not in the – they've been using some of this information, and then they've also done some work looking at a couple of different websites that report about how many are in this area and have used some calculations based on that.
And the figure they've been talking about is closer to a million, right?
I'm not sure they have. I know that some folks that are in favor of that proposal have talked about it being about $1 million. But I'm not, I'm not 100% sure on what they're saying.
Okay. So other comments or discussion?
Well, I just want to add, I mean, I think it's easy for our public to get lost when we get into these discussions about current appropriation levels and things like that. I guess I just want to go back to, you know, sort of the fundamental point here is, you know, Portland is undergoing a multifamily apartment development boom here, and not enough of that market share is being captured as affordable housing. Similarly, I think we're going to see, and we're seeing it already, and we're going to attempt to legalize it and zone it appropriately. an increase in short-term rentals, and we are trying to capture some of that revenue stream, that incremental revenue stream, again, to help develop affordable housing, because we are, I think everybody can make the connection here that to the extent people are going to make rooms available on a short-term rental basis rather than a long-term rental basis, that is going to diminish the supply of affordable rental housing.
But Commissioner, we've already done that. That's what we did in the budget. We knew we were going to be getting this new revenue. We allocated $1 million to the housing fund.
That was one time. This is an attempt.
Ongoing.
And the Housing Investment Fund was one time.
Was it? And what about the ongoing? What does the ongoing?
The $1.25 million I don't have in front of me. It was for different programs within
housing.
That
was more for
some of it was short
term homelessness program,
short term rent assistance, and some other programs.
I also don't remember in any of my conversations with the mayor that the money that he put into his proposed budget was linked to the short term rental revenue. It was in response to a community desire to have additional housing funds invested, and the HIF was an area that the BAC had identified as a priority item. Mayor had a menu of options to choose from. I don't even remember a single time we discussed it in the context of short-term rentals.
That's true, though. It was part of the forecast. There are some fundamental budget practices issues that I think we need to discuss, so it's my intention to set this over for a week since you've brought these amendments today, but I wanted to give Commissioner Novick a chance to comment.
Actually, Andrew, I just have a question about one of the whereases, which says an amount that equals half of the City of Portland's 5% portion of the transient lodging tax for short-term rentals. I assume that short-term rentals includes existing B&Bs, and I wanted to know what the revenue is from that, and do we have any historic practice of dedicating that revenue?
I believe that refers to the totals that Commissioner Fritz was mentioning between 600 and 650,000. That would include sort of.
But the existing is 75,000 at plus 67,000.
About 150,000 or so is what the existing short-term rentals that are on status with us and remitting the taxes are contributing now.
But there is a portion that's been going, you know, a portion of existing transit lodging taxes. That again would go into this Cal target. I think the overall point, because in terms of linkages, I mean, I think what we're getting at here, and we've talked in the last couple of days about city policy around, you know, earmarking general fund. That's actually the purpose of the policy is to say, general fund money comes into the general fund. Council then gets to decide on policy, you know, rationale how to allocate that out. And what we try and avoid doing as much as possible is saying, you know, this dollar from this revenue source goes to this program. And again, the reason there is sort of on a yearly basis as you do your budget, being able to do that. Now, to the extent and the mechanism that we've come up with here essentially says, you know, you want to make that connection, which is fine. We'll do it through a Cal target adjustment, and every fall bump, council will have an opportunity to look at that and say, yeah, that is in fact what we want to do going forward.
Well, Mayor, I will simply say that we often, some of us, complain about inertia and resistance to change. I think the fact that this issue has been placed on the table for discussion gives us a chance to think creatively about establishing linkages and also understanding the cause and effect of other decisions that we make. And while I share some of Andrew's caution about creating too many triggers and diversions from general fund money, I'm also mindful that in some of our most interesting discussions in the last couple of years, we have talked about going upstream and asking what is the impact of a decision and what are some of the intended or unintended consequences. So the idea of specifically thinking about short-term rentals and what its fallout is in our community, particularly around affordable units, and then saying, well, could we take some of that revenue to address it, I actually think has a nice symmetry. It's not perfect budgeting, and Andrew, your job is to always call that out, and you do it well. But I appreciate the fact that Dan has framed this because I think it's an interesting conversation.
Okay.
And if this is going to be set over
I'd like to set it over. We're going to have the hearing this afternoon.
I think it'll give us,
I've got some concerns about the budget policy issues and what the boundaries are there. So I'd like to have those conversations and then hear the hearing this afternoon. We think we know what we're going to do. But, you know, as we just saw with the street fee, sometimes the schedule changes. Commissioner?
I was just going to say that, although, I mean, I've been reading the national articles about the concerns housing advocates have about the impact of short-term rentals on the housing market, and I very much appreciate Commissioner Saltzman's intent. I do want to raise another concern, which is that once we have a particular policy attached to a funding mechanism, there's a strong incentive to continue the policy. For example, once we decide that 30% of urban renewal money goes to housing, then every housing advocate has to support the continuation of urban renewal. And although I don't think the amount of money here seems likely to be great enough to have this effect, I'd be a bit worried, I'm going to use extreme hyperbole here, but a bit worried about the prospect that 2 years from now we find out that one out of every 10 B&B users is an axe murderer, but we can't shut down Airbnb because we're getting money for housing from it.
Let's hope that that scenario doesn't come to pass, or even any percentage at all.
Mayor, I would just request that it be placed on the agenda next week after we vote on the zoning amendments.
Sure, no, I'm intending to set it over for 1 week.
Commissioner Novick, would that include Timber Joey?
Place him on the agenda.
I'm not aware that Timber Joey has murdered anyone.
I want to have a vote on this scheduled, I guess, before the vote.
Oh, I get it. Yes, okay. Yes, thank you. All right, thanks, Andrew. Any other comments? So we'll continue this for 1 week.
Mayor, can I just ask a scheduling issue?
Yes, we've got a little more work to do here. And